from Bessie that I was endeavouring in good earnest to acquire a more attractive and sprightly manner. I was to be seated somewhere, and until I could speak pleasantly, remain silent. A small breakfast room adjoined the drawing room. I slipped in there and soon possessed myself of a book. I mounted into the window seat and drew the red marine curtain nearly close. I was then happy, happy at least in my way. I feared nothing but interruption, and that came too soon, for the door opened, and I heard my cousin John's voice.
Oh, Madam Mope. Oh, where the dickens is she? Lizzie? Georgie? Jane is not here. Tell Mama she's run out into the rain, bad animal.
She will be in the window seat, to be sure, John, behind the curtains.
Yes? I'm here. What do you want?
Say, what do you want, Master Reed? I want you to come here. There! That is for your sneaking ways of getting behind curtains. And for the look you had in your eyes 2 minutes since, you rat. What were you doing behind the curtain?
I was reading.
Show the book. You've no business to take our books. You're a dependent, Mama says. You've no money. Your father left you none. You ought to beg and not live here with gentlemen's children like us. Now I'll teach you to rummage my bookshelves. Go and stand by the door, out of the way of the mirrors and the windows. Go along.
Don't throw the books at her, John. You'll spoil them.
Oh, no. There. Take that.
My head is bleeding.
Wicked, horrible boy. What? Did you say that to me? Did you hear her, Eliza and Georgiana? Won't I tell Mama? But first, just let me get at you, you rat, you beggar!
Master John.
What is it, Bessie? You too, Abbott. What are you both doing here?
It's Miss Jane, ma'am.
Nasty, bad-tempered little thing.
I told you not to go near her, John. I do not choose that either you or your sisters should associate with her.
They are not fit to associate with me.
Be silent, Jane. How dare you speak so?
What would Uncle Reed say if he were alive? What? My Uncle Reed is in heaven, and he can see all you do and think. He knows how you wish me dead.
You wicked, evil child. Take her away to the red room and lock her in. Abbott, help Bessie. Quiet, children. Come along now. Leave her. Disgraceful behavior.
Hold her arms, Miss Abbott. She's like a mad cat.
What shocking conduct. Now, there. Be quiet, will you? What shame is there to strike a young gentleman?
Your benefactress's son. Your young master.
Master! Is he my master? Am I a servant?
No, you're less than a servant, for you do nothing for your keep. She never behaved so before, did she, Miss Abbott?
Ah, but it is always in her. She's an unkind little thing.
Come, Bessie, we will leave her. I wouldn't have her heart for anything.
I was left alone. Alone in the chamber in which Mr. Reed had breathed his last. The room was chill because it seldom had a fire. It was silent because remote from the nursery and kitchen. Solemn because it was known to be so seldom entered. Daylight began to forsake the red room. I heard the rain beating on the staircase window and the wind howling in the grove behind the hall. I grew by degrees cold as a stone, and then my courage sank. I doubted not that if Mr. Reed had been alive, he would have treated me kindly, and I began to recall what I had heard of dead men returning from their graves. I endeavored to be firm. Shaking my hair from my eyes, I lifted my head and tried to look boldly round the darkened room. At this moment, a light gleamed on the wall. It glided up to the ceiling and quivered over my head. My heart beat thick. My mind was filled with horror. A sound filled my ears, which I deemed the rushing of wings. Something seemed near me. I was oppressed, suffocated. Endurance broke down. I rushed, screaming, to the door and shook the lock in desperate effort.
Jane Eyre should be left in the Red Room till I came for her myself.
Miss Jane screamed so loud, damn, and I...
Loosen Bessie's hand, child. It is my duty to show you the tricks will not answer. You will now stay here an hour longer.
Oh, Aunt, have pity. Forgive me. I cannot endure it. Let me be punished some other way. I should be killed.
Silence. Violence is almost repugnant. Sam, we will leave her. Lock the door,
Bessie. No! No, no! Have pity! Have pity! No! No!
Jane? Ah, that's better. Tell me, who am I?
You are Mr. Lloyd, the apothecary.
Good. Give me your hand, Jane. We shall do very well by and by. What made you ill?
She had a fall.
Fall? Can't she manage to walk at her age?
I was knocked down. But that did not make me ill.
That's for you, nurse. You can go.
I don't.
You
think
can
I...
go. I'll give Miss Jane a lecture till you come back.
Oh, very well.
Now, Miss Jane, the fall did not make you ill. What did then?
I was shut up in a room where there is a ghost. Till after dark.
Ghost? Oh, you are no baby to be afraid of ghosts.
Oh, Mr. Reed's ghost, I am. He died in that room and was laid out there. And it was cruel to shut me up alone without a candle. So cruel that I think I shall never forget it.
Nonsense. And is it that makes you so miserable?
I am unhappy. Very unhappy. For other things.
What other things? Can you tell me some of them?
For one thing, I have no father or mother, brothers or sisters.
You have a kind aunt and cousins.
John Reed knocked me down, and my aunt shut me up in the Red Room.
Are you not very thankful to have such a fine place as Gateshead Hall to live at?
It is not my house, sir. If I had anywhere else to go, I should be glad to leave it. But I can never get away from Gateshead till I am a woman.
Perhaps you may. Who knows? Have you any relations besides Mrs. Reed?
I don't know. I asked Aunt Reed once, and she said possibly I might have some poor, low relations called heir, but she knew nothing about them.
Yes. Tell me, Miss Jane, would you like to go to school?
Away from Gateshead? Oh, yes. I should indeed like to go to school.
Well, well, who knows what may happen. Oh, Nurse Bessie, is your mistress returned? I should like to speak with her before I go.
The carriage came up the gravel walk not 5 minutes ago.
Splendid. I'll go and have a word with her. The child ought to have a change of air and scene. Nerves not in a good state. Well, good day. Good day. Look after her, Nurse Bessie.
Do you feel as if you could sleep a little, miss? Shall I bring you up something to eat?
I will try, Bessie.
That's right. Lie up now. There. Took this round you. There.
Thank you. Thank you, Bessie.
You're wanted, Bessie.
I'm just coming, Miss Abbott. Christmas and the New Year were celebrated at Gateshead with the usual festive cheer. Presents had been interchanged, dinners and evening parties given. From every enjoyment, I was, of course, excluded. I sat alone in the solitary and silent nursery. And then, suddenly one day, Bessie came running upstairs and bid me go down directly, as I was wanted in the breakfast room. I slowly descended and stood in the empty hall, intimidated and trembling. Who could want me? I asked inwardly, as with both hands I turned the stiff door handle. Then passing through and curtsying low, I looked up at a black pillar. Such at least appeared to me at first sight, the straight, narrow shape standing erect on the rug. The grim face at the top was like a carved mask.
This is Jane Eyre, respecting whom I applied to you, Mr. Brocklehurst.
Her size is small. What is her age?
10 years.
So much. Well, Jane Eyre, and are you a good child?
Perhaps the less said on that subject, the better, Mr. Brocklehurst.
Sorry indeed to hear it. Come here. Look at me. No sight so sad as that of a naughty child. Do you read your Bible?
Sometimes.
With pleasure. Are you fond of it?
I like Revelations, and the book of Daniel, and Genesis and Samuel, and a little bit of Exodus, and some parts of Kings, and Chronicles, and Job and Jonah.
And the Psalms, I hope you like them.
No, sir.
No? Oh, shocking. I have a little boy who knows 6 Psalms by heart. And when you ask him which he would rather have, a gingerbread nut to eat, or a verse of a psalm to learn, he says, oh, the verse of a psalm. He then gets 2 nuts in recompense for his infant piety.
Psalms are not interesting.
That proves you have a wicked heart. You must pray to God to change it.
Mr. Brocklehurst, this little girl has not quite the character and disposition I could wish. Should you admit her into Lowood School, I should be glad if the teachers were requested to keep a strict eye on her, and above all, to guard against her worst fault, a tendency to deceit.
She shall be watched, Mrs. Reed. I will speak to Miss Temple and the teachers.
I will send her then as soon as possible, Mr. Brocklehurst, for I assure you, I feel anxious to be relieved of a responsibility that was becoming too irksome.
No doubt, no doubt, madam. And now, I wish you good morning. Little girl, here is a book entitled The Child's Guide. Read it with prayer, especially the part containing an account of the awfully sudden death of Martha G. A naughty child addicted to falsehood and deceit.
You may go, Jane. I told you to go. Leave the room at once. Return to the nursery.
No.
What?
Aunt Reed, I am not deceitful. If I were, I should say I loved you. But I declare I do not love you. I dislike you the worst of anybody in the world except John Reed. And this book about the liar, you may give to your girl Georgiana, for it is she who tells lies and not I.
What more have you to say?
I am glad you are no relation of mine. I will never call you aunt again as long as I live. And if anyone asks me how I liked you and how you treated me, I will say the very thought of you makes me sick, and that you treated me with miserable cruelty.
Dare you affirm that, Jane?
How dare I, Mrs. Reed? How dare I? Because it is the truth. You think I have no feelings, and that I can do without one bit of love or kindness. But I cannot live so. And you have no pity. People think you are a good woman, but you are bad, hard-hearted. You are deceitful.
Jane, you are under a mistake. What is the matter with you? Why do you tremble so violently? Would you like to drink some water?
No, Mrs. Reed.
Is there anything else you wish for, Jane? I assure you, I desire to be your friend.
Not you. You told Mr. Brocklehurst I had a bad character, a deceitful disposition. And I let everybody at Lowood know what you are and what you've done.
Jane, you don't understand these things. Children must be corrected for their faults.
Deceit is not my fault.
But you are passionate, Jane. That you must allow. Now, return to the nursery. There's a dear. And lie down a little.
I am not your dear. I cannot lie down. Send me to school soon, Mrs. Reed. For I hate to live here.
Five o'clock had hardly struck on the morning of the 19th of January when Bessie brought a candle into my closet and found me already up and nearly dressed. I was to leave Gateshead Hall that day by a coach which passed the lodge gates at 6 a.m. Bessie was the only person yet risen. She had lit a fire in the nursery where we breakfasted.
Just a little more of this bread and milk.
Indeed, I cannot, Bessie.
Then you must take some of these biscuits. I'll put them in a bag.
Going off your food like that.
Such nonsense.
Come, Bessie. Don't scold.
You are a strange child, Miss Jane. A little roving, solitary thing. And now you're going to school, eh? And won't you be sorry to leave poor Bessie?
What does Bessie care for me? She is always scolding me.
Because you're such a queer, frightened, shy little thing. You should be bolder.
What, to get more knocks?
Nonsense. But you have been put upon, that's certain. Oh, child. What sorrowful eyes you fix on me. Why do you always start when I chance to speak to you sharply? Are you afraid of me?
I don't think that I shall ever be afraid of you again, Bessie. And I shall soon have another set of people to dread.
If you dread them, they'll dislike you.
As you do, Bessie.
I don't dislike you, miss. I believe I'm fonder of you than of all the others.
You don't show it.
Sharp little thing. You've got quite a new way of talking. What makes you so venturesome and hardy?
Why, I shall soon be away from you, and besides,
and so you're glad to leave me. I dare say now if I were to ask you for a kiss, you wouldn't give it me.
I'll kiss you and welcome. Bend your head down. There.
Well, come on now. Here's your pelisse and your bonnet. I'll come down with you. Will you go into Mrs. Bedroom and bid her goodbye?
No, Bessie. She came to my crib last night when you were gone down to supper and said I need not disturb her in the morning or my cousins either. And she told me to remember that she had always been my best friend and to speak of her and be grateful to her accordingly.
What did you say, miss?
Nothing. I covered my face with the bedclothes and turned from her to the wall.
That was wrong, Miss Jane.
It was quite right, Bessie. Your mistress has not been my friend. She has been my foe.
Oh, Miss Jane, don't say so.
I am ready, Bessie. Goodbye to Gateshead Hall.
Is she going by herself, Bessie?
Yes.
How far is it?
59.
It's a long way. I wonder Mrs. Reed is not afraid to trust her so far alone.
Come along now. Come along, please. No time to lose. Lend her my hand with that trunk, George. And where's the party, eh?
There she is. Come along, miss.
Could have popped her inside of her trunk by the look of her.
Bessie,
There, there, Miss. Give me another kiss.
Be sure to take good care of her, coachman.
Aye, aye. All right, dear George. Then off we go.
I remember but little of the journey. I only know that the day seemed to me of preternatural length. At dusk, we ceased to pass through town. The country changed. Great hills heaved up round the horizon. As twilight deepened, we descended a valley dark with wood, and I heard a wild wind rushing amongst the trees. Lulled by the sound, I at last dropped asleep.
Whoa! Steady there!
Is there a little girl called Jane Eyre here?
Yes, I'm Jane Eyre.
Help the young lady down, George, not forgetting the trunk.
What a night, to be sure. Leave the trunk here, please, just inside the door. Thank you.
All aboard! Up on we go!
Now, miss, follow me, if you please. Go in there. Go and warm yourself by the fire while I tell Mum you've come.
I stood and warmed my numb fingers over the blaze, and almost immediately the door opened, and an individual carrying a light entered. Another followed close behind. The first was a tall lady with dark hair. Her countenance was grave, her bearing erect. The other was more ordinary. She looked, indeed, what I afterwards found she really was, an under-teacher. The tall lady spoke.
The child is very young to be sent alone, Miss Miller. She'd better be put to bed soon. She looks tired.
Yes, Miss Temple.
Are you tired, my dear?
A little, ma'am.
And hungry, too, no doubt. Let her have some supper before she goes to bed, Miss Miller. Is this the first time you've left your parents to come to school, my little girl?
I'm an orphan, ma'am.
How long is it since your parents died?
Soon after I was born, ma'am. My father was a clergyman. He caught the typhus fever while visiting among the poor, and my mother took the infection from him.
And who is the lady whom Mr. Brocklehurst called your benefactress?
Mrs. Reed, my uncle's wife.
Did she not then adopt you of her own accord?
No, ma'am. She was sorry to have to do it, but my uncle got her to promise before he died that she would always keep me.
I see. And how old are you?
10, ma'am.
Well, I hope you'll be a good child. Now you'd better run along. Miss Miller.
Tonight, I was to be Miss Miller's bedfellow. When laid down, I glanced at the long row of beds, each filled with two occupants. In 10 minutes, the single light was extinguished. And amid silence and complete darkness, I fell asleep. When I again unclosed my eyes, day had not yet begun to dawn, but a loud bell was ringing. The girls were up and dressing. I was about to begin my first day at Lowood Institute. During my first morning's tuition, the door opened, and in came the lady who had spoken to me on my arrival.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside
Miss Miller, silence, girl.
He restoreth my soul.
I have a word to address to the pupils. Girl, you had this morning a breakfast which you could not eat. You must be hungry. I have ordered that a lunch of bread and cheese shall be served to you all before the midday meal. Mr. Brocklehurst, it is to be done at my responsibility, Miss Miller.
Very good, ma'am.
Quietly, quietly, girls. That is all I wish to say, Miss Miller.
Thank you, Mom.
My first quarter at Lowood seemed an age. During the winter, the deep snows prevented our stirring beyond the garden walls except to go to church. Our clothing was insufficient to protect us from the severe cold. We had no boots. The snow got into our shoes and melted there. Our ungloved hands became numbed and covered with chilblains, as were our feet. One afternoon, as I was sitting with a slate in my hand, puzzling over a sum, my eyes raised an abstraction to the window, caught sight of a figure just passing. I recognized almost instinctively that gaunt outline. And when, 2 minutes after, all the school, teachers included, rose en masse, it was not necessary for me to look up in order to ascertain whose entrance they thus greeted. It was Mr. Brocklehurst, buttoned up in a surtout and looking longer, narrower, and more rigid than ever.
I suppose, Miss Temple, the thread I bought at Lowton will do. It struck me that it would be just of the quality for the calico chemises.
Your direction shall be attended to, sir.
And there is another thing which surprised me. I find, in settling accounts with the housekeeper, that a lunch consisting of bread and cheese has twice been served out to the girls in the past fortnight. Who introduced this innovation? And by what authority?
I must be responsible for the circumstance, sir. The breakfast was so ill-prepared that the pupils could not possibly eat it.
Madam, allow me an instant. You are aware that my plan in bringing up these girls is not to accustom them to habits of luxury and indulgence. And when you put bread and cheese instead of burnt porridge into their mouths, you may indeed feed their vile bodies. But you little think how you starve their immortal souls. Miss Temple, Miss Temple, what is that girl with the curled hair? Red hair, ma'am. Curled all over.
It is Julia Seven.
Julia Seven, ma'am. And why has she or any other curled hair?
Julia's hair curls naturally.
Naturally? Yes, but we are not to conform to nature. I have again and again intimated that I desire the hair to be arranged closely, modestly, plainly. Mr. Paul, that girl's hair must be cut off entirely. That tall girl, tell her to turn round. Tell all the first form to rise up and direct their faces to the wall.
Stand up, girls, and turn round.
All those top knots must be cut off.
But, sir, if I might suggest...
Madam, my mission is to mortify in these girls the lusts of the flesh. I repeat, those top knots must be cut off. A careless girl. Ah, it is the new pupil who has dropped her slate. I must not forget that I have a word to say respecting her. Let Jane Eyre stand forward. Fetch that high stool and place the child upon it. Thank you. Miss Temple, teachers and children, you all see this girl? You see, she is young. And yet the evil one has already found a servant and agent in her. Teachers, you must watch her. For this girl, this child, is a liar. This I learned from her benefactress who adopted her, and whose kindness and generosity the unhappy girl repaid by ingratitude. Let her stand half an hour longer on that stool, and let no one speak to her during the remainder of the day. And now, ma'am, will you kindly tell Miss Saunders that she shall have some darning needles sent next week? But she is not on any account to give out more than one at a time to each pupil.
Jane. Jane Eyre.
Miss Temple.
I came on purpose to find you. Have you cried your grief away?
afraid I shall never do that.
Why?
Because I have been wrongly accused. And you, Mom, and everybody else will now think me wicked.
We shall think you what you prove yourself to be, my child. Continue to act as a good girl, and you will satisfy me.
Shall I, Miss Temple?
You will, my dear. You know, Jane, that when a criminal is accused, he is always allowed to speak in his own defense. You have been charged with falsehood. Defend yourself to me as well as you can. And come to my room and say whatever your memory suggests is true. But add nothing and exaggerate nothing.
That is the whole story, Mom. And if it had not been for Mr. Lloyd, who came to see me when they made me ill, I expect I should still be living at Gateshead Hall.
Thank you for telling me your story, Jane. I know something of Mr. Lloyd. I shall write to him. If his reply agrees with your statement, you shall be publicly cleared from every imputation. To me, Jane, you are clear now. Come and kiss me.
Mom, I can never thank you sufficiently.
There. Now, sit here at my side. You are my visitor tonight. I must treat you as such. I'll ring for Barbara.
Thank you, Mum.
I've not yet had my own tea. Oh, Barbara, bring my tray and place a cup for this young lady, please.
Very good, Mum.
Jane, open that cupboard and you'll find a nice cake inside. That's the way. Now, my dear child, you must have a good tea, and then we can sit and talk until bedtime.
About a week later, Miss Temple assembled the whole school and announced that inquiry had been made into the charges alleged against Jane Eyre, and that she was most happy to be able to pronounce her completely cleared from every imputation. The teachers then shook hands with me and kissed me, and a murmur of pleasure ran through the ranks of my companions. I would not now have exchanged Lowood with all its privations for Gateshead and its daily luxuries. I remained an inmate of Lowood Institution for 8 years, 6 as a pupil and 2 as a teacher. Then one day, Miss Temple, who had stood me in the stead of mother, governess, and latterly companion, married. She removed with her husband to a distant county, and Lowood was now no longer a home to me. I tired of the routine of 8 years in one afternoon. I desired liberty. For liberty I gasped. For liberty I uttered a prayer. It seemed scattered on the wind, then faintly blowing. I drew wide the curtain of my bedroom, and leaning far out into the night, I cried, half desperate, "Then grant me at least a new servitude." And shivering with cold, I crept back into bed. As I lay down, it came quietly and naturally to my mind. Those who want situations advertise. With the earliest day, I was up. I had my advertisement written. It ran thus: "A young lady, accustomed to tuition, is desirous of meeting with a situation in a private family where the children are under 14. She is qualified to teach the usual branches of a good English education, together with French, drawing, and music. Address, J.E., Post Office, Lowton."
If J.E., who advertised last Thursday, possesses the acquirements mentioned, and if she is in a position to give satisfactory references as to character and competency, a situation can be offered her where there is but one pupil, a little girl under 10 years of age, and where the salary is £30 per annum. J.E. is required to send references, name, address, and all particulars to the direction Mrs. Fairfax, Thornfield, near Milcombe.
Within a fortnight, I had complied with all the requests set down in the advertisement, and having written of my intention to Mrs. Reed, I set out one day by coach for Thornfield Hall. I left Lowton at 4 o'clock a.m. and reached Thornfield in the evening. The front door was opened by a maidservant. I followed her across a square hall and she ushered me into a room whose double illumination of fire and candle had first dazzled me. A snug, small room, wherein sat the neatest imaginable little elderly lady, in widow's cap, black silk gown, and snowy muslin apron. She got up, and promptly and kindly came forward to meet me.
How do you do, my dear? You must be cold. Come to the fire.
Mrs. Fairfax, I suppose.
Yes, you're right. Now, do sit down. We'll ask Leah here to make a little hot negus and cut a sandwich or two. Here are the keys of the storeroom, Leah. And will you please see that Miss Eyre's luggage is taken to her room?
Very good, ma'am.
Now then, draw nearer to the fire, my dear.
Thank you, ma'am. You're very kind. Shall I have the pleasure of seeing Miss Fairfax tonight?
Miss Fairfax? Oh, you mean Miss Varens. Varens is the name of your future pupil.
Indeed. Then she is not your daughter.
No, I have no family. I am so glad you are come. It'll be quite pleasant living here now with a companion. I hope you will like Thornfield, my dear.
It looks a very beautiful place, ma'am.
Yes, it is. But I fear it'll be getting out of order, unless Mr. Rochester should take it into his head to come and reside here permanently, or at least visit it rather oftener.
Mr. Rochester? Who is he?
The owner of Thornfield. Oh. Did you not know he was called Rochester?
Why, no. I thought Thornfield belonged to you.
To me? Bless you, child, what an idea. To me. I am only the housekeeper. To be sure, I am distantly related to the Rochesters by the mother's side, but I never presume on the connection.
And the little girl, my pupil?
She is Mr. Rochester's ward. He commissioned me to find a governess for her. Ah, here she comes to meet you.
Madame Fairfax? Come in, Miss Adele. Come and speak to the lady who is to teach you.
Ah! Bonjour, Miss Adele.
But I had no idea that she was a foreigner, Mrs. Fairfax.
Her nurse is a foreigner, and Adele was born on the continent.
Si, I'm a gouvernante, my governess.
Mais oui, certainement. Bonjour, ma chère Adele.
You speak my language as well as Monsieur Rochester does. Madame Fairfax is all English.
I don't understand how she mixes it so with French. But you will make out her meaning very well, I dare say.
Fortunately, yes. I made a point of conversing as often as I could with Madame Pierrot at Lowood.
Mademoiselle, what is your name?
Eyre. Jane Eyre.
Eyre? Oh. I cannot say. I came over the sea in a great ship with a chimney that smoked. Oh, I did smoke. I was sick, and so was Monsieur Rochester. Long ago, I lived with Mama, but she's gone to the Holy Virgin. Mama used to teach me to dance and to sing. A great many ladies and gentlemen came to see Mama.
But after your Mama went to the Holy Virgin, as you say, with whom did you live then?
Monsieur Rochester asked me if I would like to go and live with him in England. I said yes.
There, now run along to Sophie, your bonne, as you call her. She will be waiting to put you to bed, I guess.
Marie, ma bonne, she was sick, too. Eh bien, bonsoir, mademoiselle. Eyre, nous serons causés demain.
Yes, Adele, we will talk tomorrow. Good night.
Sophie!
Well, that is your pupil.
A pretty child with her fair curls. She cannot be above 8 years old.
Yes, that is just her age. Now, you must feel tired with traveling. Mia will have taken the sandwiches and a hot drink up to your bedroom. I will show you where it is.
I slept soon and soundly. When I awoke, it was broad day. I dressed myself with care. I even wished to look as well as I could, and to please as much as my want of beauty would permit. I felt it a misfortune that I was so little, so pale, and had features so irregular. However, when I brushed my hair very smooth, put on my black frock, and adjusted my clean white tucker, I thought I should do respectably enough to appear before Mrs. Fairfax. After breakfast, Adele and I withdrew to the library. When I had talked to her a great deal, and got her to learn a little, I allowed her to return to her nurse. I then proposed to occupy myself till dinner time in drawing some little sketches for her. As I was going upstairs to fetch my portfolio and pencil, Mrs. Fairfax called to me from the dining room.
Your morning school hours are over now, Miss Eyre, I suppose?
Yes, Mrs. Fairfax. Why, what a beautiful room. Walnut-paneled walls and purple chairs and curtains. It is like a fairy palace. And in what order you keep these rooms?
Well, Miss Eyre, though Mr. Rochester's visits here are rare, they are always sudden and unexpected, and so I think it best to keep the rooms in readiness.
Is Mr. Rochester an exacting, fastidious sort of man?
Not particularly, sir.
Do you like him? Is he generally liked?
Oh, yes. The family have always been respected here.
But has he no peculiarities? What, in short, is his character?
Oh. Yeah. His character is unimpeachable, I suppose. He is rather peculiar, perhaps. He has travelled a great deal. I dare say he is clever, but I never had much conversation with him.
In what way is he peculiar?
I don't know. It's not easy to describe. Nothing striking, but you feel it when he speaks to you. You cannot be always sure whether he is in jest or earnest. But come now, Miss Eyre, and I will show you the rest of the house.
How handsome it all is.
Now, come this way, up these stairs.
Do the servants sleep in these rooms?
No, they occupy a range of smaller apartments to the back. No one ever sleeps here. One might almost say that if there were a ghost at Thornfield Hall, this would be its haunt.
So I think. You have no ghost, then?
None that I have heard of.
Nor any traditions of one.
I believe not. And yet it is said the Rochesters have been rather a violent than a quiet race in their time.
Where are you going now, Mrs. Fairfax?
On to the left. You must see the view from there. Wait while I go ahead up the ladder and unfasten the trap door.
It is good of you to give yourself so much trouble, ma'am. Mrs. Fairfax?
I'm coming, my dear.
Mrs. Fairfax? Did you hear that curious laugh? Who is it?
Some of the servants, very likely. Perhaps Grace Poole.
Did you hear it?
Yes, plainly. I often hear her. She sews in one of these rooms. Huh. Sometimes Leah is with her. They're frequently noisy together.
Grace, it sounds so tragic.
Grace!
Yes, ma'am?
Too much noise, Grace. Remember direction.
Yes, ma'am.
She is a person we have to sew and assist Leah in her housemaid's work. Not altogether unobjectionable in some points, but she does well enough.
Madame, vous êtes servie! Oui, j'ai faim, moi.
Ah, there is the child calling us to dinner. Come quickly and see the view, and then we will descend to our meal.
Et moi, je vais monter. I show you quickly how to climb the ladder, yes? Yeah? After déjeuner, I dance for you, mademoiselle.
The promise of a smooth career, which my first calm introduction to Thornfield Hall seemed to pledge, was not belied on a longer acquaintance with the place and its inmates. Adele made reasonable progress and entertained for me a vivacious, though perhaps not very profound, affection. Her gay prattle and efforts to please inspired me in return with a degree of attachment sufficient to make us both content in each other's company. October, November, December passed away. One afternoon in January, Mrs. Fairfax had just written a letter, and I volunteered to carry it to Hay. Gathering my mantle about me and sheltering my hands in my muff, I did not feel the cold, though it froze keenly. I lingered until the sun went down. The evening calm betrayed alike the tinkle of the nearest stream, the sough of the most remote. A metallic clatter broke on these fine ripplings and whisperings, A horse was coming. I was just leaving the stile, yet as the path was narrow, I sat still to let it go by. In addition, I heard a rush under the hedge, and close down by the hazel stems glided a great dog, whose black and white colour made him a distinct object against the trees.
Steady! Steady! What the deuce is to do now? Oh, confound the ice. Oh, quiet, pilot. Oh, my leg. Oh, damn the weather.
Are you injured, sir? Can I do anything? You
must just stand on one side in case Mazarua kicks up as he and I try to rise. Come. Up now. Up, Mazarua. Down, pilot.
If you're hurt and want help, sir, I can fetch someone either from Thornfield Hall or from Hay.
Thank you, I shall do. I have no broken bones.
Only a sprain.
I cannot think of leaving you, sir, at so late an hour in your solitary lane, till I see you are fit to mount your horse.
I should think you ought to be at home yourself. Where do you come from?
From just below. I will run over to Hay for you with pleasure if you wish it. Indeed, I'm going there to post the letter.
You live just below. Do you mean at the house through the battlements?
Yes, sir.
Whose house is it?
Mr. Rochester's.
Do you know Mr. Rochester?
No, I've never seen him.
He is not resident, then?
No.
Can you tell me where he is?
I cannot.
You're not a servant of the hall, of course. You are...
I am the governess.
The governess. Yes, well, you may help me if you'll be so kind. You have not an umbrella that I can use as a stick.
No.
Well, I must beg of you to come here. You must excuse my hand on your shoulder while I endeavor to remount. Steady. Steady, lad. Right, now. Thank you. Hand me my whip. It lies there under the hedge. Now, make haste to the letter to Hay, and return as fast as you can.
I took up my muff and walked on. It was an incident of no moment, no romance, no interest in a sense, yet it marked with change one single hour of a monotonous life. My help had been needed. I had given it. Trivial though the deed was, it was yet an active thing, and I was weary of an existence all passive. The new face, too, was like a new picture introduced into the gallery of memory, and it was dissimilar to all the others hanging there, firstly because it was masculine, and secondly because it was dark, strong, and stern. I had it still before me when I re-entered Thornfield. I did not like returning here. To seek my own lonely little room, and then to meet tranquil Mrs. Fairfax and spend the long winter evenings with her and her only, was to quell wholly the faint excitement wakened by my walk. However, I hastened to her room, and there, all alone, sitting upright on the rug, I beheld a great black and white long-haired dog. It was just like the animal I had seen in the lane.
Pilot? Oh, good dog. Good pilot.
Oh, I brought the candles, miss.
Thank you. Leah, what dog is this?
Oh, it came with the master, miss.
With whom?
With master. Mr. Rochester, he has just arrived.
Indeed?
Yes, they're all in the dining room, and John has gone for the surgeon. The master has had an accident. His horse fell and his ankle is sprained.
Did the horse fall in Hay Lane?
Oh, yes, coming downhill. It slipped on some ice. Miss Eyre, is anything the matter?
Thank you.
the first part of Jane Eyre, adapted by Barbara Cooper from the novel by Charlotte Bronte. Jane Eyre was played by Meg Wynne Owen and Mr. Rochester by Patrick Allen. John Reed, Judy Bennett, Eliza Reed, Sheila Grant, Georgiana Reed, Olwen Griffiths, Mrs. Reed, Betty Bascom, Miss Abbott, Kathleen Helm, Bessie, Eva Stewart, Mr. Lloyd, Lewis Stringer, Mr. Brocklehurst, Clifford Norgate, Porter's wife, Nancy Levinson, Coachman, Lewis Stringer, Barbara, Jane Knowles, Miss Temple, Caroline John, Miss Miller, Deddy Davis, Mrs. Fairfax, Betty Hardy, Adele, Joe Manning Wilson, Leah, Sheila Grant, Grace Poole, Nancy Nevinson, and schoolgirls Judy Bennett, Olwen Griffiths, and Sheila Grant. The episode was produced by Betty Davis.